Thanks, Andy. Welcome, everybody, to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. The polls right before the debate indicated that the race for president had tightened considerably over the last few weeks. Gone were Secretary Clinton's post-convention bump and her wide margins in states like Pennsylvania and Ohio. So will the debate last night change those numbers? What'd you think? Today on Midday, reactions to last night's showdown at Hofstra University from two keen observers of the political scene. Liz Copeland is the founder of the Urban Conservative Project and a former Republican candidate for the Baltimore City Council. And Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is an associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where she also teaches in the departments of Africana Studies and Language, Literacy, and Culture. We also want to hear from you with your take on whether or not you learned anything new about either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and whether or not your preferences in this election changed in any way based on what you heard. So to join the conversation, give us a call, 410-662-8780. That's a different number than the number you call to pledge. And by the way, we appreciate everybody who has pledged so far in this fall membership campaign. But to join Midday today, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or you can send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. So Liz and Kimberly, welcome to you both. Appreciate your being here. Liz, did you ascertain a clear winner or loser last night? What'd you think?
I think it was very, very interesting and entertaining to watch, actually. And I think along with the other 99 million Americans who tuned in, that we wanted to see what was going to happen. I think there was a bit of sensationalism that my party's candidate brought to it. And just to see him one-on-one, you know, up against Hillary Clinton, I don't think, in my opinion, that there was a clear winner, which I think is surprising when you look at all of the gaffes that Donald Trump has made over this presidential election cycle, as well as the 29, 30 years that Hillary Clinton brought to the table as a seasoned politician, as a trained attorney, that she didn't walk away to me as a clear winner. She could have, I believe, she could have called out Donald Trump a little bit more, not on his lies, but more on the facts, where there were some misstatements or material misrepresentation of facts. And I think that she wasn't able to do that. I believe that her team may have asked her to dial down that so she didn't come across as a word that's often used with strong women that rhymes with witch. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that may have been done intentionally, but it's one of three. Possibly she'll hold off for the third one. I also believe Donald Trump will do the same. He'll bring the rhetoric, the zingers, all of the issues that he can attack Hillary Clinton on in the third debate.
So Kimberly Moffitt, a lot of folks in the Clinton camp worried that the bar would be set so low for Mr. Trump that if Mrs. Clinton didn't have this, you know, knockout punch and just, you know, walk away hands down the clear victor, it would be, in a sense, a victory for Donald Trump. How did you read it?
Yeah, I actually have to agree with Liz that this was not hands down a clear win for Hillary Clinton. I do believe she performed better than Donald Trump when I take a look at the entire 90 minutes that we had the chance to see the two candidates. But this was not a slam dunk for her. What I do think was different and I thought was savvy for her to do this time versus what I've seen her do in other settings where the two have not been together is she decided not to play Trump's game, because I feel like, and using a sports analogy, that she has definitely been complicit in playing the style of play that he wanted to do this election. So she was oftentimes refuting or responding to something that he was receiving attention for instead of staying focused on what she needs to handle and take care of in order to remain focused on the issues for her party and for those that she wants to try and appeal to as voters. And she did that last night. Sometimes that came off as being too prepared, mm-hmm. being too stoic and unwilling to show part of who she is in terms of her personality. But the flip side of that also is she showed us a candidate, which is really interesting because I am going to put in this gender politics piece. She showed us a female candidate who can be the one seen as rational when compared to Donald Trump, who seemed very emotional, which oftentimes gets plagued on female candidates more so than men. He was the one that was moving the body a lot, that had the numerous nonverbal communicative expressions that conveyed his disgust or frustration or this is ridiculous or a waste of my time. All of those things were being conveyed, which was really interesting to see that type of disparity between the two candidates.
So the split screen.
Yes.
most folks believe that the split screen definitely worked in Secretary Clinton's favor, not in Mr. Trump's favor.
I would
agree. But it's interesting. I mean, Liz Copeland, can you be, and the Trump campaign in the spin room afterwards and then all morning this morning has been saying that Hillary Clinton is this standard issue politician, scripted, doesn't speak from her heart. Can you be, however, too prepared to be in a debate or to be the president of the United States? I mean, what does that mean? There's two phrases that are interesting to me, that she was too prepared. And the other is that Mr. Trump had an opportunity to look presidential.
Correct.
That drives me nuts. What look presidential? We don't want someone who's looking presidential. We want someone who is the president.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting. First of all, all of the rules that we walked into this interview with that we have been using for our political punditry over the past year, they don't apply.
That's right.
And when you think about Al Gore and his presidential debate where he was sighing and he was rolling his eyes, he got a lot of flack for that as well. If you go back to Kennedy and Nixon just appeared unshaved. He looked higher when you had him against Kennedy, who was very, very tan. You could clearly see that the image, the body language, it all plays into the voter's decision. In this particular case, I think it's very interesting when people talk about maybe it's not fair to say that Hillary Clinton was too prepared because we kind of want our president to be prepared. But I think it speaks to the authenticity that oftentimes she gets slammed with lacking, that she is just not authentic. She's just not an average American. She just doesn't get it because most average Americans, they don't know where Aleppo is. I mean, Gary Johnson should know where Aleppo is because he wants that office. But most Americans don't. They're not as polished. They make statements where they're relying on their listener to take into inferences and to make deductions. It just happens all the time. I think in this particular case that she did very well looking presidential and sounding presidential when you compared her in a split screen that they had the entire debate next to Donald Trump, who even people within my party say he doesn't have the temperament, he doesn't display the personality and the behavior to be worthy of that office, and he actually failed to provide us a different Donald Trump. Now, granted, Kellyanne is doing something amazing.
It's Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager of just the last month and a half.
His third campaign manager to date, right? And she has been able to do something. And I joke about it that when I see Donald Trump talking to the people, when he is when he's speaking using the teleprompter, he's almost as if a child who's been diagnosed with ADHD is on the strongest dosage of Adderall. He's so tempered. He's kind of mild, but he's not him. It's something's off about him. And last night, you saw where he had these points where he was flaring up to the Donald, and he must have remembered something that they told him in debate prep. Don't be yourself. And he dialed it back down. And I think what you saw is a man fighting with himself, fighting with this natural instinct that no matter what helped him win the primary, has him at a statistical dead heat now with Hillary Clinton. It works for him. And I'm not quite sure that he should move away from that personality and that demeanor. I do believe there's something about the office of president that we want people to be better than us. If we could vote for ourselves, if we could be president, we would. But we want someone who's the best of us, all of us, including all of the diversity that this nation brings. And I don't think Donald Trump was able to do that last night. He didn't demonstrate that.
Yeah. And Trump, of course, famously made big hay about how he didn't prepare for the debate, that he didn't need to, that he knew what he was talking about. He was all loose. He was on the campaign. He even chided Secretary Clinton for not being on the trail with him while she was, a hold away studying. However, towards the end of the debate, I couldn't help but notice that he said, for example, I was going to say something really terrible.
Oh, that was childish.
And then I decided not to. So if he was going to say it, that meant he had thought about it, prepared it, was ready to, unleash this horrible thing. And it turns out that it was about Mr. Clinton, Bill Clinton's sexual infidelity, 20 years ago. Mm. And so of all of the things that Donald Trump was called on for stretching the truth or speaking in utter fabrication, perhaps one of the fabrications is that he wasn't actually trying, you know, preparing for this debate.
Yeah, that moment for me and a few others after that felt very much like a petulant child of not knowing what to do with information that they had at their disposal. And I also feel like for Trump on that particular issue, it didn't indicate to me that he had prepared for that, that typical with how he has carried out in this campaign, which is what has appealed to many voters, is he is more extemporaneous and willing to kind of go off the cuff and say, here's what I know people are feeling based on what I'm hearing from voters as I'm on the campaign trail. Here's how they are responding to me. So I'm just going to give back to you what it is that I also see as problematic. And so that particular issue that was about Bill Clinton and his infidelities was simply one of those zingers that could have been used, but he found himself saying, well, but if I'm more presidential, like my campaign is telling me to be, that would not be a good move. And that's why he chose not to do so.
Kimberly Moffitt from UMBC is here in the studio with me. Liz Copeland is here as well. She's the founder of the Urban Conservative Project. You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. So we're going to take a break in a little bit. But Liz, I mean, there were, by some estimates, 5 to 7% of completely undecided voters going into last night's debate, with another 10% or so, 10 to 12% supporting the minor party candidates, Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. So that leaves somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% undecided voters, or at least voters who have not yet decided to vote for either Clinton or Trump. That's a fairly large number of undecided voters given the proximity of the election. I mean, we're, what, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away? Do you think that any of those people were swayed one way or the other last night?
I think that's... It's hard to tell at this point. And keep in mind, the polls are just, you know, they're polls. They're not accurate reflection of what we're going to see on Election Day. I mean, this time, period of time, Dukakis and Bush, Dukakis was up 18 points in September. And, well, we know he didn't become the president. I was looking at some of the poll numbers at the beginning of the debate, and for favorable rating for undecided, Donald Trump in the first 30 minutes of the debate was up. He was up by 40 points. Towards the end of the debate, it began to level out to the levels that we saw prior to the debate. So the answer is no. I don't think anyone was swayed. I think that Donald Trump and his supporters say that he won and he maintained that support. Hillary Clinton, they did the same thing. Undecideds are going to tune in again. I think they're going to tune in again. And by the second debate, they're going to make their decision. I don't think it's the first debate. I think it's the second.
Yeah, just real quickly, Kimberly, before we go to a break, the first 30 minutes of the debate were a very different deal than the last 60.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we see reflected in the poll that Liz is raising. But I also have to say that I really struggle with this whole notion of this huge percentage of undecided voters. I think there are a number of folks who at this point in time have a sense of where they stand, have chosen not to articulate that, have chosen to say, you know, it's probably a third party for me, or I will walk in on that day and stick with my party. But the idea of 20% still sitting around 6 weeks out saying, I don't know.
Seems weird, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, maybe we'll hear from some of those folks when we come back after a break. So we are going to take a quick break. We'll get your comments and thoughts about last night with my guests, Kimberly Moffitt and Liz Copeland. What do you think about the status of the campaign now that the first of three presidential debates is in the history books? But first, what do you think of the programming that you hear on WYPR? What do you think of the idea of becoming a sustaining member of your public radio as we continue our fall membership campaign? I think that now is the perfect time to make that call. Become a member. Let's send it back to Andy Bienstock and Sheila Cast, who can tell you how to do that.
I don't think anybody knows it was Russia that broke into the DNC. She's saying Russia, 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 but I don't, maybe it was. I mean, it could be Russia, but it could also be China. It could also be lots of other people. It also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay? Because the truth is, under President Obama, we've lost control of things that we used to have control over.
Donald Trump last night in the debate with Hillary Clinton making what a lot of folks thought was a kind of a weird reference to someone weighing 400 pounds hacking into the DNC. Welcome back to Midday. Let me add my thanks, by the way, to everybody who's made a pledge in our fall membership campaign. We very much appreciate it. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the debate last night with Liz Copeland, the founder of the Urban Conservative Project, and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt from the faculty of UMBC. You can join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or drop us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. So, Liz Copeland, you are a Republican and a self-described never-Trumper. Trump mentions at the end of that little clip that under President Obama, we've lost control over things that we used to have control over. This seems to be a fundamental sentiment adduced by many of his supporters, that they feel like their lives are going out of control, and for some reason we need to have things shaken up in the way that only a Donald Trump can shake them up. On the other hand, the Republican establishment, along with many people on the other side, very much, if Trump has a major weakness, a sort of central weakness, it's people worried about his hand on the nuclear button, in this notion of national security. Do you think he did anything last night to advance or diminish his people's confidence in him to be the most powerful person on the planet Earth?
Absolutely not. I don't believe he did. When I looked at some of the feedback from members of the Republican Party, and Rudy Giuliani claimed that he had a debate victory and that he presented his position with Reagan-esque demeanor and delivery. I think that is not only hyperbole, but I think it's a gross misrepresentation of what I actually saw. For many urban conservatives, we look at domestic policy and we try to balance the needs of individuals and how we spend our taxes. But then we look at foreign policy, we're not quite to the point of being isolationists, but we do want America to lead and to make sure that we are ensuring that our national security and that we're always safe. When you look at Donald Trump and his relationship with Putin, it's concerning. One, because, of course, it kind of it smacks in the face of the way that we've approached our relationship with Russia in the past, especially when we talk about the civil rights violations that occur in Russia. But what Donald Trump does, he takes this conversation, his relationship with Putin, and tries to describe himself as a leader, a strong leader against another strong leader. Then he weaves in national security with our border and how it's weak and how we're going to be at risk for individuals, and then puts it in the whole basket of immigration, how your borders are weak. You have people coming into our country. They're here to not only harm you physically, but to harm you financially by taking your jobs. But if we can make a good business deal with China and Russia, I'll solve it all. And that doesn't make sense. But it is working. We can't ignore the polls. We can't ignore many people. Recently, there was a poll. I know we break out these subgroups, educated whites, women, African-Americans, uneducated. And sometimes I take exception to the fact that a lot of journalists always start off with uneducated whites support Donald Trump as if, they're not smart enough or they're not savvy enough. But the point is that recently, white educated voters on the issue of foreign policy prefer Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, the former Secretary of State. That's this presidential election. These presidential candidates are not just a reflection of these parties and the two individuals, but of America, of us. What we're deciding, what we're choosing is the right way to go. And while I personally disagree with him, and you're right, I am a never Trumper, but don't be surprised if other proclaimed never Trumpers go into that booth and hit that button with an R beside it, because they're going to put party over politics. That's and right. They're going to be more of a voter, not for Donald Trump, but in opposition of Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you what button you're going to push?
At this point, I don't know. I don't know. But I can tell you this. I will not vote for Hillary Clinton. There, former President George Bush, senior, not junior, told former Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Kennedy Townsend in private, which became public in a Twitter feed, he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. There are several people. Jeb Bush is not voting for Donald Trump.
Sure.
There's several people. But and these are people who have been consistently conservative, and they're still not voting for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I can't vote for Hillary. I'm undecided if I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, but I won't vote for George Johnson. And that's another thing. I'm not quite sure, and I'm going to stop talking so that Kimberly can talk. It bothers me when people say you have to choose one or the other.
Mm.
Or if you choose the one that you
it's
don't.
It's an election.
Right.
But here's the deal.
The ballot's only 8x10.
That's true. But you have an option to write in. And you have a third party, a fourth party that you can choose.
Yeah.
And I think that if you vote for the person that you don't necessarily like, but because you want to follow your party over your preference, that's a wasted vote is also, in my opinion, not what our founders intended for us. It's someone that's supposed to represent you, no matter how slight or how great. the most representation that you can get out of these candidates.
But Kimberly Moffitt, you know, one of the little demos that people point to is suburban women, right? Who are largely assumed to be white, but both suburban white, black, Hispanic women who don't live downtown, who live out in the suburbs, who want to be assuaged, want to have their fears about Trump's temperament assuaged. You know, when he makes comments about, you know, Russia, and maybe it's some 400-pound guy, you know, in his bed, when he says stuff like that, that just seems like, but it just seems wacky, you know? I mean, so many of what he says, so many things of what he, that he says just seem wacky. Do you think they were at all assuaged last night?
No, I mean, again, I think folks are still exactly where they were when they started this debate. And if anything, this really for NBC and whoever else was carrying it was just great sensational TV, at least for that 90-minute period, because folks were sitting on the edge of their seats wanting to know what would be said, how would it be said, and what might be this engagement between the two candidates in particular.
Kimberly Moffitt from UMBC, Liz Copeland, the founder of the Urban Conservative Project. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. You can join the conversation. I would love to hear from a Trump supporter about your impression of the debate last night, whether or not your opinion changed because of the debate last night. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. We'd love to hear from supporters of any of the candidates. Midday@WIPR.org is our email address, our Twitter feed, @Midday. Tom Hall. Lester Holt last night, I want to talk about the section that Mr. Holt devoted to race and racial inequality. When he asked Mr. Trump about what he would do to bridge the gaps that comprise the racial inequality in our country, this is what he had to say.
When I look at what's going on in Charlotte, a city I love, a city where I have investments, we need law and order in our country. Our inner cities, African Americans, Hispanics are living in hell because it's so dangerous. You walk down the street, you get shot. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down.
Kimberly Moffitt, what do you make of that? When asked about racial inequality, he goes right to law and order. And he says something that he's not the only one who thinks. You know, there are places in this country, you walk down the street and you get shot. That's how he put it.
Yeah. Again, it's a tactic that Trump has used throughout this campaign regarding law and order, but also playing on our fears. And I, for one, am a American and voter who doesn't like to get caught up in fear appeals as being the reason why I should vote for a particular candidate. And I'm looking for clear, definitive responses and plans around some of these issues. And the fact that race has not been at the forefront of this campaign, but certainly has played a major backdrop just based on what's happening in many of our urban centers, it seems like both candidates would have done a better job in addressing that issue. And I say that recognizing that I was not impressed with the responses of either of those candidates. At most, Hillary Clinton gets a couple of points extra because she used the phrase implicit bias. And so at least someone in her camp is giving her some sense of what does that mean and how does it get played out.
And when she talked about police accountability.
Yes. But other than that, neither one of them actually seemed to grapple with that issue in any real substantive way that I thought meant they were really concerned about it.
And Liz, I mean, the immediate impulse to equate the racial divide, racial and economic inequality with law and order, how do you think that's going to read with the electorate?
I think it speaks to his base. When you have maybe less than 1% of African-American registered voters deciding that they're going to support Donald Trump, I don't think he wasn't talking to me. I think that I understand possibly his intent to say, look, America, liberal cities, even Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Detroit, New York, liberal bastions of in this country haven't really yielded you the benefits that they said they were going to for a myriad of reasons. I mean, we can have a different conversation about that. But if he framed it in a way that said, look, these policies aren't really working for you, here's another alternative. Here's my solution. But he's not saying that. He's making these blanket generalizations that all African Americans and all Hispanics who live in inner cities are either gang members or poor or unemployed or undereducated.
And don't look like you and I.
And they don't look like you and I. And I think that that's where someone in his team is failing to properly help him understand that. But that goes back to his preparedness for this office. Now, Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, I remember when she called African American men super predators. Mm-hmm. I remember when she supported,
which Trump made a point of bringing up,
a zero tolerance policy. I absolutely do. So I think that it would be unfair to not point out her flaws as it relates to policies she wanted to support for African Americans if we only looked at Donald Trump's.
I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Liz Copeland is the founder of the Urban Conservative Project and a former Republican candidate for the Baltimore City Council. She lost in last April's primary to Matthew McDaniel, who will face Democrat Zeke Cohen in the November election. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is on the faculty of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where she teaches in the departments of American Studies as well as Africana Studies and Language, Literacy, and Culture. Time for another quick break to talk a little bit about how much we appreciate your listening and how much we depend on your support for shows like Midday and On the Record with Sheila Cast and all of the shows that you enjoy here on WIPR. Here's Andy and Sheila to let you know how you can become a member of WIPR.
I have put forth a plan to defeat ISIS. It does involve going after them online. I think we need to do much more with our tech companies to prevent ISIS and their operatives from being able to use the internet to radicalize, even direct people in our country, in Europe and elsewhere. But we also have to intensify our air strikes against ISIS.
Hillary Clinton addressing the issue of terrorism last night. Donald Trump continues to assert that he has a secret plan that he's not letting the enemy or anybody else know about. Welcome back to Midday. My guests today are Liz Copeland, the founder of the Urban Conservative Project, and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who's on the American Studies Department at UMBC. We're talking about the debate last night. We hope you'll join us. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So we have an email from Anne in Washington who says, did your guests see or hear anything in last night's debate that would suggest that any particular voters would be more likely to vote because of what Clinton or Trump said, particularly women, African-Americans, Hispanic voters, and college-educated voters? In other words, Liz Copeland, when Hillary Clinton has this, you know, what seems to be a sort of systemic approach to, systematic approach to, you know, confronting ISIS and obviously the kinds of challenges that she would face were she elected, does that move the needle for particular groups?
I don't believe it did. I really don't. I believe that they firmed up, maintained their support for people who walked into that debate viewing, knowing who they were going to support. And when it comes to the issue of ISIS, I think many people who may be undecided on whether they want to hand Donald Trump the nuclear codes, whether they want him to be the commander in chief, still have questions about that. They may look at Hillary Clinton, especially with her time as Secretary of State, with the withdrawal of troops in that area, with Iran becoming more of a dominant power, and starting to question if she's going to be more of the same. She's going to continue the Barack Obama administration's approach to managing that, or are they willing to take a risk, a high risk, and give that opportunity to Donald Trump and go in there and beat the hell out of him, as he says.
And Kimberly Moffitt, you know, were there any zingers that either of them got? I know Secretary Clinton tried the phrase a couple of times, trumped up trickle down, talking about the economy.
That didn't stick. Or at least it didn't seem to resonate continuously. I did hear her mention that a couple of times. I actually thought, regarding Trump, that the conversation about ISIS, where he speaks specifically about her time as Secretary of State, he's quoted, or I should say, he's paraphrased as saying something about, you know, ISIS was a small baby then, and now it's in over 30 countries, which was a direct response to say, when you were in office, you had an opportunity to help with this, and if anything, it grew. It became a much larger issue for our country. So what does that say about you as Commander-in-Chief being able to navigate this space for
us. And, you know, a month ago, he claimed that President Obama was a founder of ISIS. Last night, he, you
well,
know,
and Clinton.
Dipped into hyperbole by saying that, you know, Secretary Clinton has been fighting ISIS all of her life. And, of course, ISIS hasn't existed for that long.
But doesn't that speak to his temperament? I mean, and those are very fair, critical points mm-hmm. that any other Republican nominee would have went into that debate and started off with. Yeah. After the debate, Donald Trump goes back to who he's always been and starts referring to the Democratic nominee as Crooked Hillary. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not on a middle school playground. High school was rough for me, but I mean, my God, people don't call me names in my age, in my profession now.
Sure.
You expect more from a candidate. But those are fair points, that yep. ISIS has grown. It's directly related to our foreign policy, and Secretary Clinton was responsible
That's
during
right.
that time.
That's right. Aaron
is on the phone from Aberdeen. Aaron, thanks for calling Midday. Glad you're on the show. You are a Trump supporter. What'd you think last night?
I thought it was fairly obvious that Secretary Clinton was a much more polished debater, but I believe that Mr. Trump got his points across and made it fairly obvious that he was the agent of change and Hillary Clinton was the status quo.
And Aaron, what do you think we need to change from? What is it that's going on currently that that needs to be redirected?
Well, if you've been following the economy, you can see about the only positive light in the economy is the stock market. Other than that, Mr. Trump brought that out, that the stock market is the only bubble that currently exists and is a bright light in the economy. Other than that, we have continued job loss. We're looking at possibly another lost decade. I think that if we're looking at somebody like Secretary Clinton that has the big bank's best interests at heart, I really don't think that she's the person that will bring change.
And, of course, the unemployment rate is down 6 or 7 points from where it was in 2008. There was just a report that said that more middle-class families, the income from middle-class families actually grew over the last 12 months in 2015. And there are other people's concerns about Mr. Trump's temperament when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to, as Liz says, having his hand on the nuclear code. Does that give you any concern?
No. I remember President Bush was not the best public speaker, and some people questioned his temperament early on, but I think he surrounded himself with advisors that helped polish his message and helped him accomplish his goals, and I think Mr. Trump will do the same thing. But again, you know, if you brought up your point about the economy and how there are people in the job market that are gaining jobs, I'd say look at the not in labor force statistics, and I'd say that you know, there's a flaw in that logic.
Well, Aaron, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Kimberly Moffitt, one of the virtues that Mr. Trump has long adduced about himself is that he's rich. Of course, we may not be exactly sure exactly how rich he is. We're at the moment forced to sort of take his word for it. Here's a little bit of an exchange that Secretary Clinton had about that subject.
Or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets, zero for schools or health.
So, of course, Liz Copeland talking about Donald Trump's decision not to release his tax returns, although candidates have been doing that for since time eternal, decades. What are the applicable skills of a wealthy business person to running the government of the United States of America?
Well,
and does Trump have them?
Some would argue clearly his ability to take targeted, calculated risks that yield a high reward. And you can see that he's actually done that. He's been successful in doing that. Another thing would be to have some business acumen to be able to balance the books, to be able to pay your debts on time, pay your bills on time, to be able to be a strong leader, to foster you know, ingenuity and innovation within companies so that people can benefit not just the business owners' wallets. Well, he can't demonstrate that. He can't show us any of that because he really hasn't had an opportunity, according to him, to really focus on his business because, you know, he's been doing other things and, you know, he's just been diversifying his portfolio, and that in and of itself was a success. I can't really point to anything where he's been a successful businessman. He's filed for bankruptcy several times. There's been all types of labor disputes with a lot of his hotels. But when it comes down to taxes, it's an issue of who do you owe? Did you pay on time? Who do you do business with? And is this the type of person that I want to have access to, you know, all types of business deals with other countries? If we're talking about who's going to monitor what Wall Street is doing, are you going to go in there and have an acumen to understand what's going on and be honest and have the integrity to manage that? But I don't know if Hillary Clinton has demonstrated that. She has the acumen and the integrity to go in there to do that as well.
We heard from Andrew via email. He says, prior to this debate, I felt like I was voting against Trump, but now I feel confident that Secretary Clinton is our best choice, and I plan to vote for Clinton. So there's one of those voters who was, as you say, Kimberly, sort of inclined to vote for Secretary Clinton. As we finish up here, Kimberly, Catherine writes, can we discuss the undecideds and the fact that they may possibly send Republicans to all three branches of the government?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
And these undecideds are going to have sway here. I mean, what's your take on their impact in this election?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'll say it that way because I think in the downstate elections that we can see something very significant happen. I just don't see that at the presidential level.
Is there a particular thing that either candidate needs to do in the next debate?
So I want to answer another part of that piece by saying what has been most successful for Trump is his ability to convey the rugged American ethos, that has worked fabulously in his favor, and also having the ability to utilize media as savvy as he does, it benefits him tremendously. So, I mean, it will be interesting to see what he decides to do with that in the next debate, and if he does stick with that piece about that rugged American ethos, it can work for him favorably.
All right. Kimberly Moffitt is an associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. She also teaches in the departments of Africana Studies and Language, Literacy, and Culture. Liz Copeland is the founder of the Urban Conservative Project and a former Republican candidate for Baltimore City Council. Thank you so much to you both. We will have you back, and we'll keep an eye on all this stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. That'll do it for us today on Midday. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a conversation with Dr. Margaret Flowers, the Green Party candidate for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Barbara Mikulski, and Ninabu Eze, the Green Party candidate who's running for Congress in the 3rd District. One more program note tonight at 9 o'clock. Please join me for Choral Arts Classics. We'll talk about a great choral masterpiece, the Foray Requiem. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. The show is produced by Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, and Kathleen Cahill, with production assistance from Lauren Ferguson. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks to Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves cold fried pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours on the web, joesquared.com. Thanks also to everybody who has stepped up and become a member of WIPR in our fall membership campaign. If you haven't yet made that move, here's Andy and Sheila to tell you just how easy it is.